From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host, all over the Great Lakes State and beyond, on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and podcast being brought to you by Carnivore Club. Use the code Wild Michigan for a discount on your next order on Carnivore Club, the meat of the month club. We're going to have these guys on back on the show next week. We're going to speak with Tim Ray from Carnivore Club, find out what's going on, and we've had samples of their some of the meats that they put up, some of the jerkies that they had in the September box, or was it the August box? I think it was the August box. Quality stuff. I mean, absolute quality, 100% natural. It was fantastic. And there's a link on our website at wildmichiganradio.com, brought to you also by Lucky Buck, Darton Archery, HHA Sports, and, of course, Costa Sunglasses and MUCC. Getting ready for next week, October 1st, bow season starts in Michigan. The goose season is open up right now in Michigan. And this is when a lot of people go to the tree stand, that so many people are not fishing. But you could be fishing. We're going to check in with David A. Rose right now, who's on the road in Minnesota. Welcome, David. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in the middle of Nowheresville, Minnesota right now. That's right. I found a spot to pull over. I actually got reception.
And actually have a signal, because every time you stopped before, we were losing signal. But we actually have you now, which is good.
Yeah.
What's going on in the Great Lakes right now, David? Because we've not had really cool temperatures, which I don't think has really charged the steelhead run yet, or the initial fall run. And by now, we usually are.
Yeah, by now, you know, we're starting to see, usually the rivers are full of salmon this time of year. And this year, even the DNR told us quite a while ago, you know, they had to really reduce stocks of salmon numbers that they were stocking, because they were afraid they were going to have a crash of the bait fish, which is the alewife.
Mm-hmm.
More fish than there was bait. And so this year is very low when it comes to salmon. Now here we are, we're just coming into October. That steelhead run you were talking about, yeah, October we start to see a few steelheads, and it really takes off by the end of October through November. That's really the prime time for river steelhead.
All right, so what are we seeing in the rivers right now? Are we seeing any kings or cohos coming in?
There are some. It is not gangbusters by any means. It's going to mean every fish that you do catch is truly a trophy because, you know, if you're used to going down and perhaps getting a limit of fish, boy, that's going to be tough. But you still have the chance to catch cohos and kings. And it's just they're a little harder to come by and much more appreciated.
Are they weather triggered fish? I mean, is it when the water temps really start changing? That's when they say, "Oh, clock! It's time to go. We got to go."
Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons that a salmon's going to run up. Obviously, our days are getting shorter. The waters are starting to cool off a little bit. Boy, you get one of those nasty cold fronts that brings a big north blow. You know, Lake Michigan riles up. Boy, that gets whatever salmon are in the Great Lakes, that'll get them running up into the rivers. And, of course, rain, a nice cool rain, so when you've got a big fluctuation of water. And, of course, that's, again, a cold front usually is when we get the rain. So, yeah, they're triggered a lot by the nastier the weather, the more fish that'll end up in a river.
Speaking with David A. Rose, guide up on the Traverse City area with Wild Fishing, also outdoor writer. Real quickly, a good word put out about you by our good friend Bill Parker a couple of weeks ago. We were at the Camo at the Capitol event with MUCC, and he was touting how you are like one of the only people in the world that turns in their articles on time. And I felt you needed to know that.
Well, that's good. That's so funny. Now, there's a couple editors out there, and if they're listening, we'll disagree with that.
Well,
because I blame them for having odd deadline times. But no, but Bill Parker, editor of Michigan Outdoor News, he used to call me poster boy because I was the poster boy of getting my articles in on time.
Exactly what he called.
So it just depends on the publication. Some, like I said, there's a couple editors out there that are going to go, no.
So, I mean, let's talk about some of the salmon, you know, some, as you said, that are in the rivers right now. What is the attractant going to be? Is it going to be a bigger lure? Is it going to be something smaller like they're used to seeing? You know, is it going to be the feed bag type thing? Because, like you said, right now, they're really not pouring in like what, you know, we would normally see about this time of year.
Right, right. You know, so you want to use lures or baits that are really going to trip their trigger. And what I say mean by that, so let's say you're going to cast some hardware being like maybe a couple, some big spoons or inline spinners, you know, like a big meth spinner or something like that. Size with blades, bigger blades, size 5, size 6, bigger spoons, lure, crankbaits, you know, like bomber long A's, that kind of thing. Something that has a wide wobble. And really, you know, it just trips that instinct in them to strike out. You know, we know that the salmon are not taking in food for nourishment anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, since the moment they were born, they've been striking out at whatever comes wobbling their way. So that really works. Also, guys use skein being fish eggs that are still tight in that membrane, and so they'll hook that up and they'll float that down a river under a bobber usually, so it's suspended up off bottom a little bit, and that really seems to get Chinook and Coho to eat too.
Yeah, it's I've used big spinners before, great big black spinners, and it's funny because the configuration, it was a big black spinner with a skirt even and a treble hook, but then there was a red egg or a red bead up front, which really kind of give it that whole egg sucking leech feel.
Right. I just laugh because, you know, sometimes we put too much thought into it.
Well, like, it looked good
to
me.
How many leeches do you see floating down the river sucking on eggs? You know, but hey, if you have confidence in the lure that you're casting or in the bait you're using, you will catch more fish. There is no doubt.
Well, you know, not being the educated person when it comes to flies or that nature, that's what my brain thought.
Yeah.
And when the first cast reeled in a fish and guys that have been fishing there for hours didn't catch anything, they were looking at us like, okay, where did you get that?
Well, that's,
you
know, it's right. I win.
But we're speaking with David A. Rose here on Wild Michigan. Make sure you can pick up the Carnivore Club podcast from our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and a link to Carnivore Club as well. I want to find out what you're doing in Minnesota here in a little bit. And have you done any fishing yourself here in the past few weeks since we've talked to you?
I have done a little bit of fishing. There have been a couple times I've stopped at some local northern Michigan creeks and caught some brookies and brown trout, so that's been fun. I've caught some smallmouth bass and some walleye, too. Haven't been out a lot because I was trying to catch up on work so I could make this Minnesota trip, and like I said, we'll talk about that. But yeah, locally, I kind of have not headed towards my usual salmon waters, and I have really been targeting, like I say, the smallmouth, the walleyes, and the resident brookies and browns.
Excellent. It seems that cold water fishing in the summertime is always a good time to get out. And you know, you don't need like monstrous tackle and all kinds of heavy-duty stuff. You can take the light stuff off and have a good time with that.
Yeah, we had a blast with it. Yeah, you can take an ultralight rod and catch brook trout. And that, I'm just as happy with that as I am as catching a 20-pound salmon in a river. I mean, in all seriousness.
Oh, yeah, and they eat so well.
Oh, they do. They do. I probably, it depends, you know, if they're not badly hooked or anything like that. I release a lot of trout, but
sure.
Oh, yeah, I keep a few, and they are wonderful.
Absolutely. David A. Rose is our guest here on Wild Michigan. We are talking to him. He's actually out in Minnesota. We're going to find out what he's up to in just a little bit, find out where he's going and what he's going to be doing out in Minnesota. Lots of things going on here, of course. Coming up on Thursday, the opening day of bow season in Michigan. If you got pictures from your youth hunt or your early doe season, make sure you send them to me here. You can go to wildmichiganradio.com, click on the link for contact. Send me those pictures. We'll post them up on our Facebook page. Also on our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Wild Michigan being brought to you in part by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Time is now to get it out. Get your deer coming in. Bow season on the way here in Wild Michigan.
This is Owen O'Hagan of ClaireVirtually.ie inviting you to fish County Clare, Ireland. Now back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host, being brought to you by HHA Sports, the number one name in single pin archery sight technology. Got them on our crossbows and our darting bows as well. We are all dialed in with the crossbows. Got to get my DS700 set up and ready. I could probably get that done hopefully before bow season starts. You know, October 1st has been there on the calendar for I don't know how long, and I wait. David A. Rose joins us right now. He is in Minnesota. He is what are you on your way to? You told me, but I want you to say it because it makes so much more sense when you know and you tell me.
I am actually heading towards the Minneapolis area via many different routes, and I just crossed into the Minnesota border, or over the Minnesota border here just a few minutes ago, on my way to an outdoor writers or an outdoor media group. They're having a conference, and it's called AGLOW, is the synonym for it, which is the Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Writers. So it is an association of people from all around that surround the Great Lakes, and they have these conferences all over different places, and that is where I'm headed.
So what do these meetings consist of? I mean, outdoor writers, probably some radio, TV people all getting together, but what is discussed? What's covered at these?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, if you want to learn how to be a better whatever, and I say it that way because they have seminars, and they'll have seminars on all different topics, from radio to video to writing to photography to all that kind of stuff. So you can attend these seminars and improve your own skills. And then there's also companies that are there that are sponsors of, let's say, AGLOW, and they'll have products there for everyone to test out and try out and get touchy-feely with. And, yeah, it's a win-win all the way around at these conferences.
You know, and I've been approached by a couple of our friends and you to join the Michigan Outdoor Writers Association, and not that I don't want to, it's just by the time I get to sit down and fill out the form, it's next year's form. Okay.
Now we don't have a next year's form, and I say we because I'm one of the board members of the Michigan Outdoor Writers Association.
I'm so kidding.
It is that is obviously the state of Michigan, people that are in the media for the outdoors in the state of Michigan. It is the oldest one in the United States, believe it or not. Started up in Blaney Park, if anybody knows where that is, up in the UP, off of Highway 77, I do believe, just right off 2. So, it's a neat organization, and I belong to other ones, too. Like, there's the Outdoor Writers Association of America. Now, you notice a lot of these all say writers, Michigan Outdoor Writers, mm-hmm. Outdoor Writers. It's really media because, back when these organizations started, writing was how the communication was. There was no TV when these things started. There was barely radio, believe it or not. So, it's really outdoor media, even though they say writers.
Now, when it comes to being an outdoor writer, I don't think we've really even covered this subject. And this subject I have covered on my personal Facebook, on the Wild Michigan Facebook page, and I know that I probably have not made a few people happy, which, frankly, I don't care. But because we are so inundated with so many outdoors television shows, there's a new one popping up every 10 minutes, and there's three more dying out. The writing aspect of outdoor news has been kind of, left to the people that have done it for so long. And I've not seen a whole lot of new writers come on board.
Yeah, one of the main reasons is if you want to make a living at this, it is so, so difficult. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of money in it. Like I always tell people when I introduce myself, how I make my money in this career is I have a wife with a real job.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is literally, to be an outdoor writer, and I'm not trying to scare anybody off, but to... Let's say any publication, if I wrote for, let's say, Publication X back in 1970, it changed to write a good article for them with photos, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally, they cannot pay as much as they used to. Just everything. The cost everything else. And so it is literally one of those careers where you physically make less money, but physically make less money now than you did in the 70s. So that is one reason why you don't see a lot of new names out there. And I'll tell you what, English has changed. I mean, I look at some of the stuff when I started writing, and I can't believe some of these editors purchased my stuff, because I have been self-taught. You know, if I got a D plus in English in high school, my mom would buy me pizza for a week. You know, I mean, it was, and now here I am a writer. So there's a lot of reasons why you don't see a lot of new faces in the actual writing portion of it.
And I know that publications have downsized dramatically. The local newspaper in my hometown here in Lansing was fondly referred to as the State Journal, or the Lansing State Journal. Mm-hmm. Now it's more or less the Lansing State Leaflet, you know, because it's, yep, because it's been downsized, because people are going to computers so much more. But a lot of these publications have been smart. They put their publications online, which still takes, you know, a good amount of writers. But like you said, it's like radio. Just so everybody knows, I am not remotely getting rich on this business. I'm lucky to make any money at all. I'm very grateful for the people that have taken their time and their money and efforts to put into Wild Michigan. But I also work at a classic rock station here, and then I fill in on a news talk show. I do a public service radio show. So it's a combination of four different shows to make kind of a paycheck.
Yeah, it is a tough field. And, you know, and one of the problems, and I'm not chewing anybody out, but anybody that is willing to get started into it, a lot of times they're so eager, they're willing to do things for pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who's been involved in trying to make a living on it, there's a lot of free stuff out there that editors of anybody can use, you know, because everybody wants to be an outdoor something or other, whether it's TV, radio, or writer. And because it's, you know, there's I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but there's just something about doing that. And it makes it very, very tough on folks who, especially photographers. I feel real bad for them. There's some great photos coming out that, I mean, your smartphone can take a 20. It's just amazing what these photos can come out, and people are willing to share them.
Well, I'll have to be sending you some pictures that Sarah Marie took, because we were up at Whitefish Point. She took pictures that absolutely blew my mind with her smartphone, and I took my Canon 7D and just wanted to throw it in the water.
Yeah, I know. I know my wife just got a new smartphone, and the megapixels on that thing are so more advanced than my good Olympus point and shoots, you know, like, you know, changeable lenses and all that.
Oh, yeah, stuff. Yeah, like, wow. Exactly. Exactly. David A. Rose is our guest here, wildmichiganradio.com, our website, podcast brought to you by Carnivore Club. And you know what? I appreciate you sharing my frustration. And I can't wait till January till some of these new shows come, because, gosh, I got so much yard work to do.
I'll tell you what, I admit it. I do not have cable. I do not have satellite. And I, you know, or any of that kind of stuff. And I really just don't watch outdoor shows.
Yeah, me either. I'd rather. I kind of like living it. So,
yep. And but there's some great. There are some good ones out there.
There are some very good ones out there. Exactly. And I'm glad that is true. David A. Rose, appreciate you joining us here. Check us out, wildmichiganradio.com. Bob Garner coming up next. Speaking of great shows.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Pick up our podcast, provided to you by Carnivore Club at wildmichiganradio.com. And thanks to David A. Rose for giving us some insight on what's going on with some of the fishing right now, with the salmon and the advent of steelhead coming our way. Also, talking quite candidly, which I appreciate probably more than anything, honest response about how difficult it is to be an outdoor writer. It is. And being in radio, it's about the same thing. It's a lot of work. And if you don't like to eat, well, this is the thing for you. But you have to love what you do. And I don't know why it's taken 9 years to get this person on the show, but I'm very pleased to have Bob Garner joining us right now. Of course, long time running with Fred Trost and Michigan Out of Doors TV. Your work with the DNR, the NRC. Bob, I am finding out more about you as I go on. By the minute, and I don't have enough time to read that much, honestly. Welcome, first and foremost, to the show. How are you, sir?
Great, Dram. But just remember, I'm the least interesting person I know. So let's work with that. So.
Well, you know, it's you have just done. You know what I mean? You have just done for the outdoors because you love it and you want to see it continue to grow, but it has to have a starting point. And and where exactly is that starting point for you? Where did that all begin? I mean,
that all began, in fact, that's one of the reasons of where recruitment of new hunters and fishermen are so important to me, because that all began because my dad liked to hunt, and all, but basically he was a deer hunter, and, you know, worked in the factory and couldn't get away, and many times his opening day was Thanksgiving morning, and we would come to Cadillac from a little town of Clarkston where I grew up. My mother was from Cadillac, and we would come up here, and that was such an important part of his life. And he died very early in life. He died, as a matter of fact, when I was 13. But he left me sort of with that legacy that to deer hunt. I mean, he probably shot two or three deer in his whole life, but he loved deer hunting. And I think that's really where it all formed for me. It was right there. And from that, I was just lucky to meet mentor after mentor after mentor. When I was 14, I went to they were trying to close down some hunting in Independence Township where I grew up on duck hunting on some lakes. People were upset with the duck hunters, and they were trying to close those up, so the DNR had the whole public hearings. And I went to them, and the DNR officer that was there running the public hearings asked me to speak towards the end of it, because I was there, and I was 13, 14 years old. And afterwards, he said, you made some good points, young man. Keep it up. And I think that way, and he became, after I came to work for the legislature, George became one of my closest confidants and friends. So it just, you know, it was a series of mentors along the line that did this for me.
You know, and that's very impressive too, to have taken a hold of a situation at that age. You know, being left without a dad, but still continuing on, because that has to say a lot about the impact that he left for you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and oh yeah, then that was the beginning. But just, I kept lucking into meeting the right people my entire life. and I mean, honest to Pete, I don't know how to explain it. It's been a series of luck. I didn't plan this career. Remember my father-in-law saying, "Hey, you ever think of doing outdoor television?" When I was doing radio, I said, "No, I'd never be able to do that." And then next thing I know, I'm up to my ears in it, you know. So, and in fact, I'm still doing a television show right to this very day for CMU Public Television called Destination Michigan. And I do it completely as a volunteer. You know, everybody, it's funny, people read that resume and say, you know, you did great things for the state of Michigan. The truth of the matter is, the state of Michigan did great things for me. And I'm very, very lucky to have grown up here. Could have moved anywhere I wanted to when I retired. And we are in Cadillac, Michigan. And actually, there's no place in Michigan I wouldn't live. This is a great state. We're very fortunate.
Speaking with Bob Garner here on Wild Michigan, website, wildmichiganradio.com. Bob, you worked with a gentleman both fallible and affable. I loved Fred Trost. God bless him. He was one of these guys. He was a friend. Coming to mind the Helgramite episode where he got bit, or the smelt dipping episode. You know, you guys worked together you know, it's knowing him as well as you did. I'm trying to phrase this the right way. Knowing him as well as you did, was it always just like that?
You know, he was probably he no doubt the most gifted person I ever worked with. Fred could write. Fred obviously knew voiceover. Fred could shoot. Fred could edit. Fred could do anything he put his mind to it. And that may have been part of the later downfall with him, was the fact that he was so successful in anything he tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when the friendship worked, when we worked together, it was the greatest. He's just, there were some parts about the human dimension that were a little bit more difficult for him, and it's really too bad, because he truly was as talented a person as ever set foot on a TV stage, and he really was. He just really was. And I learned an awful lot from him. In fact, I think in the last show I did, Michigan Outdoors, I thanked him profusely for it. Everybody pretty much knew that we were not on the best of terms.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he left the planet. Let me tell you this: he left the planet much too early. I wish he'd lived a long, gleeful life. I never saw a day when I couldn't wish him well. And it was because he was so very talented. He was. Now he wind up shooting himself in the foot, but then again, you know, then again, all of us have been our own worst enemies at times anyway. So, and that's just the way it went. But my God, the guy was talented. And we really owe him a debt of gratitude, because if they had not struck while the iron was hot in 1981, Michigan Outdoors, they're all the same. It would have never come back on television. I think it would have been gone for absolute good. And he took a chance and won a legal argument with Jerry Chipeta. And was able to bring that back to TV, and then, of course, the natural place for it was public television.
Sure,
and it all worked out extremely well. Now, when he lost the show, we were able to bring it back because since 1951, Michigan Outdoors has been something I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Mort Neff. I fished with Mort Neff. I just fished with his son a few weeks ago. And Howard Shelley and those guys I knew, and I just couldn't imagine when I brought it back to public television. I just could not imagine there not being a Michigan Outdoors show for us to all grow up with.
Absolutely. Bob Garner is our guest here. We're going to speak more with Bob in a couple of seconds, find out about some of the things he's done that you may not have known about. I learned a few things about you, Bob, that I had no idea. Of course, there's so much there. So we're going to speak with Bob Garner more here coming up next on Wild Michigan. Appreciate you joining us. WildMichiganRadio.com.
Still believe.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan Spirit of the Wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan, Duran Martinez. Glad to have you here we're getting ready. It's been incredible week weather-wise. We're getting towards October 1st, getting here towards bow season, which I am so looking forward to here in Michigan. And I've been looking forward to this conversation since I found out about it yesterday, that I was able to get Bob Garner here on the show. We met Bob several times over the years, but really got a decent chance to talk to you up at Lake Mitchell up there.
Yeah, up at the Kyle T. Johnson Hunting and Fishing Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, did the dedication of the Outdoor Education Center there. Yeah.
And it was funny because I was just there as a spectator and we didn't know what was going on that day. and it was so cool to be a part of this thing. We were there for the bear camp, the bear education classes that were phenomenal. And then you're there and you're cutting ribbon. Next thing I know, I'm getting pictures taken with Bob Gardner. I'm like, how did this happen? You know, you talk about walking into things. That has been my life in a nutshell. I walked into this show 9 years ago next week. I walked into my boss's office. I said, hey, if you ever want to do an outdoor show, let me know. All of a sudden, yep, you got a week to put it together. I'm like, what? I don't know anything. We made the guests the star, and then that's still the case. But your work, some things I found out about you as a member of the Natural Resources Trust Fund Board, and a commissioner, these are things that a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, well, they're just things that when I retired, I was able to get to retire very early. And I wasn't retired for a couple of months when all of a sudden the governor calls and says, hey, why don't you serve on the Natural Resources Commission? So I said, yeah, I'd had four former bosses that had been commissioners. And Jerry Bartnick, one of those bosses, said that that I trained more commissioners than anyone else. So anyway, but I had four former bosses and I never, I had seen that people get consumed about wanting to become a commissioner. And I'd seen that happen with some people whose lives were literally ruined because they never got named to the commission. And so that was not on my hit list or bucket list, was to be a commissioner. And bang, next thing you know, I was one. So, but then the trust fund too, that was really cool because that was like a full circle thing. When we decided in 1975 in a meeting with MUCC to put in a bill to take all the oil and gas revenues the state gets and put them in a trust fund for recreational land acquisition. And we did that, and it's lasted. It'll be 40. It passed in 76. It'll be in July. It'll be 40 years ago, and over $1 billion has gone into public acquisition of land and development. Over $1 billion the legislature would have just peed it away. And then years later, I got named by two different governors to serve on as a member of that Natural Resources Trust Fund, to decide where the money was being spent. So it's been a lot of fun. That's kind of the crowning achievement, being there when it started, having written the original bill, and then later on served on the board some 25 years later. So pretty cool.
Absolutely. Bob Gardner is our guest here, inducted into the Conservation Hall of Fame.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. Yeah, that was. I stood on a bunch. Durant, that's not me. I stood on a bunch of shoulders. I worked for some very, very fine conservationists, and I never had an original thought that made it anywhere. But I sure could recognize a good idea, and they were. They were very good, especially those guys who worked for the legislature. They were very good at letting me go and letting me have my head and make some decisions on legislation, and it all worked out fine. But without guys like Kerry Cameron, Tom Anderson, and Warren Gomer, and all those people that gave a rip about conservation and gave a rip about hunting and fishing, without those people, Bob Gardner wouldn't have been anything.
Tell me this, Bob. Help me with something here. Did you ever feel overwhelmed by the position? I mean, just to the point that it's like,
what position?
Well, I mean, I guess let's go with the as one of the members of the NRC. I mean,
yeah.
Did you ever feel like,
you know, what was overwhelming about it? What was overwhelming about it was for some time I thought maybe you could please most people. And then you realize is you can't, so you just do the best you can. You do what God gives you the right to know is right.
Mm-hmm.
And the chips. I can go online and read all sorts of things about me that don't have an element of truth to them, because that's, of course, the online world. But don't have an element of truth. But still, in all, I'm pretty darn sure that I did the best I could do and did it right. I was overwhelmed as I was overwhelmed when I hosted Michigan Outdoors. I was overwhelmed when I was the co-host with French Roast of Michigan Outdoors. Absolutely. But you know, you find this line of demarcation. The thing that's going to keep you from being totally overwhelmed is you just be yourself and do your best, and the rest will take care of it.
Well, that's good to hear, and I asked that question from a personal note because I was asked to be a member of the Blue Ribbon Advisor Group on state game areas, and I got called into this, and I was at my very first meeting, and I'm like, what am I doing here? How did this all happen? Because I'm looking at the people on the board, you know, some of them are really good friends, and I'm just going, I have no clue how I got here.
Durant, let me tell you, I remember reading the book about Truman, and Truman walks in his first day in the Senate, and he's overwhelmed at all these incredible people around him, and one of the old senators looks at him and says, Mr. Truman, you're trying to figure out what you're doing here, right? He says, yes, I am. He says, well, in 6 months, you'll be figuring out what the rest of them are doing here. So you've just got to plow the new ground, go in, and when you can contribute. And that's really good advice on about anything. I always like going onto a board or a committee where I lowered the average IQ. because I like working with smart people, you know. So that's just a great chance to learn. I'm glad you're there.
Thank you, Bob, and I will do just that. Got about a minute left in the segment. You've got something coming up this week. Tell me about this hunt you have coming for veterans.
Oh yeah, it's for veterans at Tales of Wagon Club, which is a great hunt club in Marion, Michigan. And every year, Chuck Connell throws this event, and other veterans show up, and National Guard folks show up and do the lunches and stuff. But they'll take over 90 veterans pheasant hunting this weekend, and it could be easily over 100. A lot of wounded veterans, a lot of folks who would get no other opportunity to do this, and Chuck Connell does this on his own with some help, you know, from some of the groups, the Pew for the Birds, But no veteran has to spend a dime. It's just one of those great ways of saying thank you. And you know, anytime you can get out with a bird dog and see a dog point and pheasants flush and that sort of stuff, it's all good stuff.
It is. It is, absolutely. And Bob, I tell you, this has been an education. It's been, at the very least, fun to have you on the show. And anytime, you know, you have something coming up or would love to talk, you are more than welcome to come on and talk with me here. We'd love to have you. And I'm sorry it's taken so long.
Well, same thing to you, Duran, too, and just keep up the good work. Every one of these shows is so necessary and so important to us, and I'm glad you're out there doing it.
Well, thanks, man. It's truly a labor of love. I love doing it, and there are days like yesterday where I'm figuring out who am I going to call, and all of a sudden I got Bob on the Facebook, and it works out that well, and I'm so glad you were here, and I thank you for all that you've done and continue to do in the outdoors, and it's such a pleasure to have you on, you know, getting to talk to you more and more when all the other times I just watched you.
Well, the pleasure is mine, Durant. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you so much. Bob Garner joining us here on Wild Michigan. Thanks to David A. Rose. Got more coming. We're going to speak with Lance Valentine in the next hour as well. Thanks to our good friends at Lucky Buck Deer Mineral out of Osseo, Michigan, Costa Sunglasses, HHA Sports, the number one name in single pin archery sight technology. Also, Carnivore Club, picking up the podcasts for you. There's a link on our website and links to MUCC, the Michigan United Conservation Clubs. All great organizations, great friends of the outdoors here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.